dare great things for Christ. Christ calls us to dare great things. In the marketplace, as well as in the mission field, there has never been a time like the present for the spirit of the Catholic entrepreneur. Now is the time for men and women of great courage and great vision to engage our church and our culture. Now is the time to dare great things. And here is your host as we dare great things, Father Nathan Cromley, the president and founder of the St. John Institute.
When it comes to leading others, Christians ought to have a distinct advantage. After all, Christians who lead believe that they are leading in the hand of God and following His lead. But what does this advantage actually look like? One spot where we can see it particularly is in our belief that our sins can be forgiven. How does our claim about the forgiveness of sins impact the world of work? In this second of our series on the Christian advantage, I want to explore the power of mercy to transform our vision of leadership. Hey everybody, and welcome back again. I'm glad to be here with you to deepen with you your understanding of leadership in the position of a Christian, that is following Christ, right? Like, does Christ and our Christian faith actually make a difference in the way that we approach the leadership challenges that we face at work every day? Now, of course, I always talk about work, but you could take this home. It's the same thing for a mother, a father, being parents, you know, of your children or trying to run your domestic household. That too requires leadership, just like it requires leadership to when you're involved in different segments of society, right? So you can apply this across the board, because wherever there's leadership, there's two things in common. Number one, there's a leader. And number two, there are followers. Okay, there's someone who's generating an influence or an impact in the world, from a teacher in a classroom to a nurse at a hospital bed, right? To a student who's helping their teacher to teach by listening intelligently and so forth, right? There's always someone who's influencing others, because all of us, anytime we are acting, are influencing and shaping the world around us. And then there is, of course, on the second hand, those who are being influenced, those who are, you know, we call them followers, but sometimes it's a subtle type of influence, right? But those who are being shaped by the leader, those two things are always going to be consonant. So what I want to do is then I want to say, well, the type of influence is going to flow from the kind of action that the leader is exhibiting. And that kind of action can be twofold. You could have an action of just somebody who is acting out of their own prudence, their own understanding of the world, their own personality, right? And that's fine. I call that natural leadership, and that's a wonderful thing. And so that's you going in and just saying, well, my dad taught me how to be this way. My mom taught me how to be this way. My grandfather taught me how to be this way. And so I am going to be this way. I'm going to exhibit these, you know, set of behaviors to situations that come into the workplace, and it's going to produce the effect of the impact of my life and my brand of leadership. And either I'm good or I'm bad or I'm indifferent, but there we go. I'm in the workplace, or I'm in my team, I'm at my home, and I'm just doing my job. Okay, that's very good. There's nothing wrong with it. It's wonderful. It's the basis of leadership. The human mind guiding our actions to find solutions to problems according to an ethical judgment that's within inside every single one of us about what's right or wrong or what's better or worse in a given situation. There is, however, another kind of influence. The influence where God influences the world through a person. And this influence is unique, because not only does our personality have the impact and the way that we speak, the way that we think things through, but we believe that God Himself could work through that to work out His great design in the people that are around us. Okay, and this is what we call Christian leadership. And it assumes the level of the natural worker, the natural leadership. You're still just as active, just as intelligent, just as engaged as before. But it adds to it an element to say, we want explicitly to let God impact His world through us. That we want our impact to carry a deeper weight and power to it, which is God's impact in the world. And so through our natural leadership, we want God to influence the world and to lead it in and through us. Okay, so this is what I call Christian leadership. And Christian leadership is just as engaging, but it has that extra element of saying we believe and we want to operate not just as individuals, but as members of the body of Christ. And then we want Christ to heal, Christ to lead, Christ to speak, Christ to influence his world through us. So practically, it looks very similar. I mean, it looks like the same thing, actually. It's like you get up every day and you go to work and you make your decisions, right? It's just that there's an added element of spirituality to open ourselves, to allow him to use us, and a way of allowing our faith to shape our actions. And that's where I really want to go deeper with you. And this will, of course, have a huge impact also on the quality of our leadership and how well we lead, the situations we can face, the things that we can solve, the innovation we can bring. I believe that there's no better way to lead and no more powerful influence on the world than when someone gives the very best that they've got to the usage of God and allows God to influence the world through them. Being a Christian leader, in other words, doesn't take anything away from the greatness and the power of the influence that our lives can bear. Instead, it adds to them the impact and influence that can come through our lives when they're wielded in the hand of God. I mean, it's not a bad thing. God is not someone who dampens the effect of our lives. God is someone who hones the effect of our lives. I mean, if I could lead my children with and in the hand of God, I would be being his instrument in a way that would bless them and help them, you know, deeper than anything I could do on my own. And it's the same thing in my work, right? I think that, in other words, God's vision for the workplace is a better one than any human vision left on its own. Doesn't mean the human vision is wrong. Doesn't mean it's bad. It just that means with God, we can think better, decide better, act better, have a greater depth of wisdom than we could on our own. So why not bring that wisdom to bear where we work? I mean, a lot of people say that's because being Christian is not acceptable in the workplace today. And I want to shake my head and I want to say, saying that's like saying that love is not acceptable in the workplace today. Because being Christian means to put into action a philosophy of love, a vantage point of love that the world needs. Yeah, maybe we can't say God, Jesus, Mary, Joseph, and all those things in the workplace. Maybe we can't. I don't know. I wish we could. And I think most of the time you can. Yet at the same token, that's not what I'm talking about in an absolute fashion. If you can proclaim the faith in the workplace, then you ought to. But I'm saying that even if you can't proclaim your faith in the workplace, you can live it, and you need to live it. And what does that look like? Actions and decisions that are based on your faith. And that when you do that, your actions and decisions are going to be just as practical as anyone else's. Do we sell the business? Do we buy a new piece of equipment? Do we expand our factory? Do we hire, you know, our competition's workforce? All those types of decisions that you have to make every day. And yet you're going to be making them from a vantage point that's superior. Our faith doesn't make us worse leaders. It makes us more effective, number one. But then number two, it makes us even more a source of blessing for the world. Remember that God knows best what's best for his world. And by listening to him and following him, we end up helping the world become a better place. Now, the Catholic Church did a great job of laying this out for us. She wrote a document called The Vocation of the Catholic Business Leader, in which she gives six principles. I'm just going to say them real briefly here for you, but I want you to write them down. Okay, these are the six guiding principles of what a Catholic business leader should keep in mind in terms of the call of Christ for them in their business. Studying these will just be one of the ways that we can understand why it's so important for us to embrace our faith at the basis of our leadership.
Would you like to hear more from Father Nathan? Join the St. John Leadership Network and receive a 2-minute glance at the gospel every Sunday morning right to your phone. To learn more, go to www.stjohnleadershipnetwork.org/member and join for free today.
All right, so let's go deeper then and try to understand even better why it's so important for us to place our faith at the base of our leadership. You know, from the it's the spring from which the river of our leadership flows. Okay, so I get it that we understand. We're not talking about necessarily proclaiming it overtly in the workplace, although why not, right? But sometimes you just can't, or it's not proper to do so. Fine. But I'm talking about you going in every day saying, the decisions that I'm going to make, or the decisions that my company is going to make, are going to flow from a position of Christian faith. There's an advantage here. I'm saying it's going to make you a more effective leader at a very practical level. You're going to find better solutions. But then number two, it's going to make you a better leader, meaning that your solutions are going to carry with them a deeper signification and a better, be a better service to the world around you. There's a real advantage here, in other words, and I want to just put that advantage, first of all, from the point of view of the six practical principles of business that the Catholic Church wrote about, just to show you from an objective point of view to not be afraid to allow your leadership to flow from your faith. Here's the first one. Businesses exist to produce goods that are truly good and services that truly serve so as to make the common good better. Okay, so what could be wrong with that? Absolutely nothing. It's, the idea is that your business itself is a response on behalf of God to the needs of the world. What a positive way of looking at what we do every day. I mean, that really has meaning and significance far beyond just trying to make money, right? The second principle is that businesses are the best way for helping the poor by building up the society to help them and those who are underserved. Of course, from the tax base that we create to the employment opportunities that we have, businesses are an opportunity to lift the world up better by the work that we generate and that we maintain. Third principle is that businesses themselves are called to emphasize the right way for working, that the world of work itself is enhanced by a Christian philosophy of work. Okay, so when we embody that in our businesses, then we have safety, empowerment, equality, all these great words are guaranteed by that worldview, which makes you wonder, if we divert from a Christian way of thinking, what's going to guarantee that the equality that we put in the workplace is really equality? And that the safety is always going to be maintained for the workers. I'm just not quite sure that a worldview that doesn't have God as its basis is going to always preserve and protect the human beings that are working with us. The fourth principle is called subsidiarity. It's a strong Catholic word. But what it means is that the employees who are in the organization are called to exercise appropriate authority as they contribute to the mission of the organization. That is to say, it's not just a bunch of worker bees, right, for the queen bee at the top. Instead, the workplace environment is one of empowering the people to make the decisions that are at their level in the organization. Okay, that is a better way of looking at society because it now means that working in a place actually lifts you up to a higher level of dignity instead of depriving you from it. The fifth principle is a really beautiful one, and that is stewardship, meaning that the business doesn't just belong to those who own it. The business belongs to everybody who participates in it, and that we have a sense of responsibility for this as a beneficial entity for the world. And the sixth one is that the profit that is generated can be shared and lift up the world by the generation of monetary profit. I mean, what a wonderful way of looking at business. And I'm just putting this out there as one example, right? Because again, most of the people who are Christians today in the workforce are struggling to really say it's a good thing to follow God as a professional. The world is instead redefining our professional careers and our work abilities in terms that are purely secular, and then saying that a religious worldview when it comes to work is actually not welcome, that somehow it'll be disadvantageous or it'll affect in a negative way the world of business. And I want to fight that with everything that I've got. Because the whole beauty of the tradition of the Christian church is that our church has consistently maintained that the free enterprise and business and the world of work is a blessing. And therefore, the leaders of that enterprise and of work and of business need to embrace their faith as what guides them. so that then their businesses can flourish according to the plan of God. And people then say, well, what does that look like? I just gave you six amazing blessings. If I was going to summarize them from right there, it'd be number one, that your work is going to be quality work. Number two, that you're going to be able to help people who need jobs. Number three, that you're going to work in a way that really benefits the worker in terms of safety and quality and puts the worker first. Number four, you're going to empower your workers and train them. Number five, you're going to be an example of a stewardship of something greater than yourself. And then number six, you're going to bless the world by the profit that you generate. This is all told really an amazing vision for work. Why wouldn't we embrace it? But it doesn't stop there. In fact, it just starts there. I want to talk to you especially now about another amazing aspect, a reason why we should allow our Christian faith to really flow through us in our leadership, and how Christ will help you to be a great leader. Here's the reason I want to emphasize in this particular class with you today, and that is the forgiveness of sins. Now, you might say right away, well, this sounds really personal, and this sounds like it's something that's really spiritual and touches the heart. And I'm going to say, exactly. Remember that you are a person and that you have a heart. And that every leader who is leading is a person with a heart. Well, I have two things that I can do, therefore, with myself. I can either care for myself with the love of God and therefore develop into a leader who is a person who is loved by God with a heart that is loved by God and graced by God. Can you imagine what your leadership would look like if you had that perspective? It would look amazing. You'd put everything that's beautiful about yourself into your leadership. But if instead I were to say, no, you know what? My heart is off limits. I mean, can you really lead people if you don't lead people like a person? I mean, you might be able to move them around. You might be able to command them. But I'll tell you what, your leadership will remain superficial because you have remained superficial. The heart of a person is the depths of who they are. And God wants into that heart so that when you lead people, you don't just lead them from the outside, but that your leadership impacts and improves who they are on the inside. Well, to do that, we need to be improved on who we are on our inside, right? In other words, it's like God wants us to lead from the inside through the outside so that through the outside, we can touch the inside, right? From our heart through our actions, so that we can shape and direct the actions of others in a way that impacts their heart. Is there any other way to really lead? I think everything else is superficial. People want to criticize Christian leadership. I think we could turn around and say, wait a second, I'm not quite sure that the other way of leading is all that much better. And here's why. Forgiveness of sins inside of me both is a key for myself becoming a great leader, and it's also the key for me allowing my workspace environment to be even more dynamic and uplifting.
Would you like to start your Thursday mornings with a scriptural leadership lesson? Join the St. John Leadership Network, where Father Nathan hosts a 30-minute call at 6:30 a.m. in all four U.S. time zones. To learn more, go to www.stjohnleadershipnetwork.org/member and join for free today.
All right, so what does the forgiveness of sins have to do with leadership? And I'm talking about workspace leadership. I'm talking about any form of leadership that's out there. All of them are going to be affected by how we view the forgiveness of sins, because leadership is always about people. And people have to deal with their past and with mistakes, right? So like you could say, well, what's the difference between mistakes and sins? Obviously, there's a lot of difference, okay? But I also think there's a lot of overlap between the two. Because even though every mistake isn't a sin, every sin is a mistake, right? A sin is just a mistake that you knew was wrong ahead of time, you deliberated upon, that you freely chose to do, okay? And then you put that from the perspective of God, and it's called a sin. If we take God out of it and just look at it from a purely natural level, right, we can have those same ideas, those same things that we could do. We could do mistakes that are just mistakes, but we could also do mistakes that we knew were wrong, we deliberated on them, and we did them anyway, okay? It's just that we don't have to put it in the perspective of spirituality or God. And then they're just called big mistakes, okay? So it all depends on how you look at it, but essentially there's a lot of overlap there. How do I cope as a leader with the fact that I am not perfect and I have chosen in my own life things that have made me flawed foundationally? And then how do I deal with that in the people that I'm trying to lead when I see that they deliberately are choosing to be flawed and that's creating havoc in the world around them? When faced with mistakes that are voluntary, and then or sins, if you would, in ourselves and in others, there are three different positions you could choose. Okay, it's going to be one of these three. You're either going to say there are no mistakes. Mistakes don't exist. Sin doesn't exist. There's no right and there is no wrong. And instead, everyone just does things. And we're not going to judge anybody based on anything that they're going to do. Okay, that's a very common option. People are instead like, hey, it's a dog-eat-dog world out there, right? I guess that means it's okay to trample on people because it's a dog-eat-dog world. I mean, the question is not whether it's a dog-eat-dog world, but whether or not dogs should be eating dogs, okay? But then you're like, wow, now you're going deep. Well, I know, because I'm a Christian. And I don't think that first way of looking at sins or voluntarily chosen mistakes, right, by people is the right way. I don't think it's good in our world to say there is no evil and there is no wrong. Instead, everybody's right all the time because it's all fun and games until their choices affect you. And then you're going to be hurt by them. And I don't think we should live in a world that's like that. And on the contrary, though, the other choice that some people make is to simply live in condemnation that's a perpetual one. Meaning if you make a mistake, it's unforgivable. And this, of course, is untenable deep inside unless you deny that you yourself make mistakes, which is exactly what a lot of people do. They walk through the world literally saying that they're thinking to themselves that they're great and then pointing out the flaws in everybody else. Okay? This is another very common way of proceeding. And it's very difficult when a leader is that way because they have power behind them. So when the leader doesn't open themselves to self-criticism or the criticism of others by being able to say, you know what, I am really flawed and I have chosen to be that way and I'm responsible for it, because they can't cope with that, well, they're going to leave really deep impacts of negativity in the people that are underneath them. And then the harshness of their judgment on the people that are underneath them will create the exact same system that they're living under, meaning that nobody can really live in a world where there's no forgiveness. So they'll simply deny that they did anything wrong. And then you create a workplace culture or another, but it's the blame game and everybody shifting and covering themselves from any kind of, you know, wrongdoing, and everything is everyone else's fault. There's a third way, however, and I want to put this as the Christian advantage. And that is to say that sins can happen and grave mistakes can be made and they might even be voluntary, and yet they can also be forgiven. Now, I'm not saying it's okay to always forgive them, okay, because like sometimes you need to dismiss, there needs to be accountability, this and that, you know, but that they can be forgiven is so important because it allows us to say that, hey, in the end, a job is just a job, okay? So there's more to you than your workplace performance. There's more to you than how you present yourself in the eyes of others. That you have a dignity as a person that's an absolute, and that is greater than even the dignity you can earn by performance. Your performance might not be good, and you might be to blame for a bad performance. And yes, maybe we'll have to hold you accountable for that. And I'm not saying you shouldn't, but I'm saying that deep down inside, guys, we need to remember that the human person that we're dealing with in our leadership, that person is deeper than the position that they have in our organization, or even than the way that they're acting in the family situation. I mean, if we took our children, for example, we held them up to that scale and we demanded absolute perfection of them, or else they wouldn't be loved. I mean, we're going to create psychopaths. And that's exactly what's happened in some families, right? People are so deeply wounded by that way of that. And why? Because sins can't be forgiven. And on the other hand, you've got people who are deeply wounded because people have denied that there's any sin. There's any sin out there at all. Just said, no, everything you do is fine. Just do what you want. Well, that's also a deep wound because you leave people bereft of any landmarks by which to navigate their pathway to happiness. There's nothing sure or certain in their life, well, that's also going to have huge psychological impact. And in the middle, there's the Christian position, which has this beautiful freedom to it and redeeming quality of a religion that comes from a savior. And it says this, both you as a leader and you as a follower can accept that you made mistakes. You can even accept that you made them voluntarily. Why? Because your sin or your mistake is not the end in and of itself, but rather it is the beginning, thanks to God's mercy, of something great. That your sin is a spot where you can open yourself up to a Redeemer who wants to join your life with His so that He can make your life shine with His. I mean, that's an absolutely amazing thing. That means that a leader who's aware of their own flaws and their own choices that have been negative and their own capacity to hurt other people will most likely be the most sensitive, the humblest, and the most compassionate leader of others. As God has dealt with me, so I can deal with you. So if on the one hand, I'm saying to myself, well, God has no room for sin, and therefore there is no sin. Well, I'm going to deal with you in the same way. There are no rules. Well, that's not going to be a good leadership. On the other hand, if I say, well, God's going to condemn my sin, there is no hope. Well, I'm going to say the same thing to the people that I work with. But if I'm a Christian, I say, no, there is evil. I'm capable of it, which is why I'm going to be humble in your presence. And yet at the same time, I'm able to steer a course away from it with God's grace. I'm going to be able to do the same thing with my workers and the same thing with everyone around me and the same people who follow me. I can bring in a perspective of this world that the world desperately needs, which is to say there is a right, there is a wrong. And any wrong that we can do can be made right by the one who loves us and has redeemed us by his blood. And his name is Jesus Christ. And a leader who leads with that conviction will lead both in the truth of what is right and wrong, and yet at the same time will lead in the truth about the humanity of the people who are doing the right and the wrong, a humanity that needs to be refreshed and encouraged, and that needs to have compassion and humility, and it needs to be connected with in order to lead it right.
Dare great things for Christ.
Share your feedback with Father Nathan. Send us an email at communications@stjohninstitute.org. That's communications@stjohninstitute.org. And visit www.stjohninstitute.org and sign up for our newsletter to receive updates from Father Nathan.